Welcome to episode 6 of the Palisades Podcast. I'm Steve Krohn.
And I'm Brooke Dougherty, and this is the Young Angels Network.
And we are here with our guest, George Wolfberg, who... There's a lot of things to talk about, George. I want to focus a lot on what he's done in retirement, but before we get to that, let me just tell you that George worked for the Office of the City Administrative Officer for 35 years. He's been president of the Santa Monica Canyon Civic Association, president and longtime member of the Pacific Palisades Community Council. He's done many things with his life, and today we want to go into that and let you all know about George and his background. So welcome, George.
Thank you.
So, George, let's go back to your early years. You, like me, are a native Angeleno. There aren't many of us.
Yes.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Hancock Park area of Los Angeles.
And what did your parents do?
My mother, I guess you could say she was a homemaker, although she had been a teacher. My father was a physician.
And were either of them involved in community service?
Yes. My mother was active in the PTA, I mean, seriously active, the 10th District PTA, I remember that now. And she used to put out their newsletter on a mimeograph machine, which we had secreted in a sort of closet in our house.
I remember those. Yeah. Long, long time ago. And your dad?
He was, you know, a doctor, so he was really busy. He did, during the war, World War II, since he was a osteopath, he wasn't deemed fit for service with the military, and he spent his the war years. He worked with the sheriff's department as a reserve deputy on, I guess, medical kind of matters. And because there weren't very many doctors during the war, he worked 6 days a week and sometimes never came home from his office. It was a very busy time and probably did not do him much good.
So, as I said initially, more than anybody I know, you, especially in retirement, have shown your commitment to community service in so many ways, and we'll go into that in a little bit. Is there anything about your upbringing or your parents or anything that you think, looking back on that, led you in that path?
I don't know. I think starting in high school, I got involved in various, student government, and had a lot of fun.
Okay. So, and you went to LA High?
Correct.
And grew up in Hancock Park?
Yes.
What was Hancock Park like back then? And now it's a very Tony neighborhood. Was it that way back then, too?
Well, there were some very interesting people that lived in the neighborhood, car dealers and just ordinary folk. So it was a songwriters. One of my best friend's father was a songwriter. And so it was a variety of people.
And what was L.A. High like back then?
L.A. High was... it was... really great experience. The student body was varied because there were people from probably south of as far south as Exposition, and I'm not sure how far north they went. So we had a variety of people, and everybody seemed to get along really well.
Now, nowadays, L.A. High is an area that, a school that you would think is, I think, is mostly black.
Oh, I think it's Hispanic.
Okay. What was it like back then?
I can only remember one Hispanic guy in our class at the time. And there were several blacks.
And did everybody get along? Were there any racial issues or Nothing. Social issues dividing you?
Nothing that I ever saw.
And then you finished up there and went on to UCLA.
Yes.
And because I've seen you at many UCLA functions, you have been active as a UCLA alum, correct?
Yes.
I see you at Pauley Pavilion all the time, seen you at other events.
Yes. We have season tickets to the basketball games. We've had them since the building was built.
Wow.
Long time.
And you also shared with me that you work for the NCAA keeping stats for UCLA football.
Well, yes, we do the stats. I'm part of the stats crew for the UCLA games that are played in the Rose Bowl.
How long have you been doing that?
About 25 years.
And you keep stats on plays and give that information to the NCAA so they can update their stats?
Correct. There's a crew. Everybody has a job to do, and I and my partner do what are called defensive stats, the tackles, the interceptions, the sacks, fumbles forced, those kinds of things.
Okay. So you finished at UCLA, and then you went across town to that other school and got a graduate degree.
The attendance at SC happened after I had been working for the city for several years. USC was attempting to consolidate their campus, and there was a city library that was sort of in the way, and the SC wanted to buy the library, but they didn't have the money. So they went to the city and said, we'll give you, I can't remember the exact number, 236,000 class credits for your employees to take classes at USC. And the deal went through, and every year you could apply to get your attendance paid for out of these credits. That went on for many years, and eventually they started saying, well, maybe you guys should pay half and use the credits for the other half. So they sort of split it as time went on. So one class a semester, and eventually got a master's degree.
In?
Public administration.
Okay. And before you, I skipped over the part between graduating from UCLA and starting at SC. What did you do for the city during that time period?
Well, I actually started working for the city when I was right out of high school as a lifeguard. And when I became old enough, I became a pool manager, and basically that helped me work my way through school, working summers at the swimming pools. And so that's sort of, I learned, you know, what the city was all about. I knew where City Hall was. I'd also done some class work where we went down and interviewed a councilman in his office. And that was Councilman Roybal, Ed Roybal. And it was a very interesting experience. And I became more and more, familiar with the city and ended up having a career there.
So during the time I served on the community council for several years, it was always clear to me that when something needed to be done through City Hall, whether it was getting information or getting some new resolution passed or something, it seemed like you always knew the people and the places to go.
Correct. Yeah.
Is that based upon having worked there with the city for so many years?
Yes. The city administrative officer has quite a bit of contact with the elected officials because we write reports that are considered by the committees and by the council as a whole. So you get to know the council members. You get to know the mayor sometimes. So it's, since we are the budget officer for the city, we would learn about the various city departments, who, what department did what, who's in charge, who to see. And so it was a tremendous background for that.
And so once you got your MPA, then you went straight to work for the city.
Well, let's go
back. You were with the city, got your MPA.
I continued to work.
Continued
to work, yes.
Okay. And what were your duties? I mean, I'm sure they changed over 35 years, but what? Give us an idea of what your positions were and what the kinds of things that you dealt with.
Well, I was a what they call a budget analyst, and each analyst is assigned one or more departments or bureaus to do all the financial reporting on their budget requests, their interim needs for maybe the money is in the wrong pot, and we would write a report and say how to do that. One of the departments that I worked with was the Recreation and Parks Department, which made me the expert on anything that had to do with any kind of sports.
Which sort of segued into the 84 Olympics.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What was your involvement with the Olympics?
Well, there were a lot of people working on it. There was a Southern California Committee for the Olympic Games that were carried the torch, no pun intended, for many years. And the a lot of work needs to be done to complete the applications that are required by the International Olympic Committee. And so I coordinated that and had some little, snuck a few things in there that would really, I'm very proud of.
Well, it's ancient history. The statute of limitations is run. You want to share with us?
Sure.
I mean, if you defrauded, the city out of millions of dollars, don't tell us.
There's two cute stories. One, they had these standard questions, and they were asking as if you were, you know, in some remote outpost of Zaire or something. Can you get a signal from the games menus to the border? And it was that elementary, that kind of a question. And then one of the questions were, will you have telex?
Which, I vaguely remember
I hardly knew what that was. Yeah. But I wrote, well, we're going to have whatever is the latest and the greatest at that time. And they came back and they said, you shall have telex. It was very important to them. Hmm. Another question that they asked were, well, you have these go through the various sports. And one of the sports was cycling, which I was heavily involved in because I was on the city bicycle advisory committee at the time. And I knew, my mentor was Alex Baum, who's Mr. Cycling of Southern California. And so they said, well, you have cycling. I said, we will have men's and women's cycling, which committed the organizing committee to have women's cycling. And as it turned out, the very first race on the very first day and the very first gold medal won by Connie Carpenter was the cycling race in Orange County.
And women's cycling wasn't on the, no pun intended, the roadmap before?
Correct.
Wow. So you must be really proud of that.
Absolutely. Thrilled.
Fantastic. Yeah. And then you mentioned that you were on the bicycle advisory committee. What was that have to do with bike paths and things like that?
This plans for paths, working with police officers, getting cops on bikes, making sure that the city is as bike friendly as possible. And this is the early days, and working on bike paths, bike trails, bike routes.
So this, I would imagine, must give you a great deal of pride to see the way LA has become dramatically more bike friendly.
Yes, it's been a long, hard slog, and it's a continual slog, but it's really, they've improved quite a bit.
I remember before the beach bike path ever existed, which I ride on every Saturday, it was hard to navigate around the beaches before. And then,
yeah, I'd like to talk about the beach bike pass. It's sort of something almost personal to me. One of the things that the community council did before I became a member was they struck a deal with the Bel Air Bay Club that the club would permit a bike path to go through their property to continue through the end of to the city limits at Coastline Drive. And this was all planned. And the funding never came through, the plans became obsolete, and it never happened. And it still hasn't happened, and it's something that I still to this day would like to see, the continuation of this path, particularly as the area of the Pacific Coast Highway, which is the only alternate in that area, is very narrow. You've got landslides, the little edge line where bike riders would ride, or it's covered with the stuff that comes off the hillside. So it's a dangerous area, and I've heard it said that this is the most dangerous highway for bike riders in the entire Pacific Coast.
And I ride there every Saturday, and I couldn't agree with you more. When you're coming north from Temescal to Sunset, there's areas where there's maybe about 12 inches between the white line and the dirt, and if somebody's not paying attention, swerves a little bit, texting or whatever, you're gone. And I keep doing it, and every time I ask myself why.
Steve, you're a brave man, Charlie Brown.
You ride on the PCH on your bike?
That's what I just said, Brooke, yes.
You should have told me that. I don't know if I want to be in business with somebody that's that crazy.
Well, if you call this a business, you're with me.
A creative endeavor. That's insanity. That's like people riding down Palisades Drive.
Business normally implies profits and revenue stream and stuff like that.
Well,
no, I do.
Sometimes I see those guys and I think, do you not have children or grandchildren or people that care about you?
It's scary, but if you live up in the Highlands like I do, there's no other way to get there other than going up to Temescal, and then you still have to ride down Sunset, which isn't the greatest.
Right.
And I'd heard about the thing with the Bel Air Bay Club. I knew that it had been passed. It had been agreed upon. And for the life of me, I don't know why it's never been done. Do you?
I did have an interesting battle with trying to get funding, because this is going to be millions of dollars to build, to get the city to, because the city has a legislative program. And if you have an item on the legislative program, then they can go to Sacramento or they can go to Washington or the city lobbyists and try to get money, get what the lovely term is called earmark for the path, because it is the millennial bike, you know, trail along the coast. And so this is a gap that needs to be completed. So Councilman Bill Rosendahl to introduce a motion to put that on the city's legislative program. And it's sort of not the way things are done. They're usually done in a committee and they come up with this and that. And so the final showdown in the city council, there were some bike activists that thought that this was not going to be a good idea because it would take away the money that the city could use to buy paint, to paint lines on streets for bike paths, and which is totally misunderstanding how the system works. And the council president at the time was Eric Garcetti, who, as you probably know, is a bike rider. And he let everybody vent and talk, and then he came up. He says, look, he said, this is not going to take the paint. This is something that we have to go to Washington, D.C. and lobby for, and it's going to be very important. And he was very supportive, and it passed. Bill Bragosa was the mayor at the time. He did not sign it. He allowed it to become law without his signing it. So although he, you know, was known to ride a bike, and I guess he rode a bike on Venice and fell over and broke his elbow later, but at the time, he just didn't want to sign it.
And so because he didn't sign it,
it became the policy, but nothing ever came of it.
Well, so that was the policy. How come it didn't get implemented?
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to make any excuses for anybody.
Well, I mean, it was something that was supposed to happen, and it just never did. Is that because no one pushed it?
It's a policy that you go out and you try to get the money. And I'm assuming that being people of goodwill, that they went out and tried and couldn't. or were unable to.
It was they just couldn't get the funding.
Yeah, and the policy, you know, the city's policy on trying to get projects funded through federal money is comes anew every year. So, you know, after a year, it probably went away.
But is that policy still on the books? Is it still policy?
It's an annual list.
Oh, so you'd have to go through and get the city to city council to vote on it, and then try.
Yeah,
to
it would be it would be included in a comprehensive report that the city would, you know, try to get this for the homeless and you know various things.
Yeah. Well, maybe afterwards we'll talk about seeing if we can resurrect that.
I'm all for it.
You know, what's unfortunately going to happen is it's going to take somebody getting killed there before everybody gets up in arms and says, let's do something.
It's going to take somebody else getting killed there.
Yes. Yes. And on that somber note, probably not a good time to take a break, but it's time anyway. So, Brooke, you have a message from our sponsor?
Thanks, Steve. That was so uplifting.
Life can't always be a bowl of cherries, Brooke.
Yes, it can. This is a shout-out to my Pacific Palisades businesswomen friends who are working so hard to make business better in town. First off, to my girl Trish Bowe and her State Farm agency, always there for this podcast. And then Jill Canella, my dear, dear friend, and I'll just say that again over the motorcycle noise. Jill Canella, my dear buddy, who I've known since the first day of Marquez PTA. She went back and got her real estate license and is now hitting her stride at Gibson. So I'm proud to know her and proud of her. And that's all I've got for now. We'll be back with some more shout outs after the next break.
Okay, so did we finish and totally depress everybody about the bikes?
No, I think keep on. Let's talk about some more accidents.
Well, I think we've wrapped it up with a bow.
Yeah. So there is nothing in the works that's going to change that you're aware of?
No.
Okay. So what else did you do while you were working? I do want to get to your retirement because that is what you've done in retirement is so outstanding. But tell me what else other issues you worked on while you were working for the city.
Well, I worked on a couple of, I think, a very interesting program that the city had was the city had an anti-apartheid program. And this was when, South Africa was in the headlines and there were problems. Very interestingly, when I was a freshman at UCLA, I applied to belong to a program called Project India, and I was asked to make a speech.
Did you go on Project India?
No, I did not.
I did.
Did you? Wow.
In 1968.
Yeah. So
I was a finalist. Oh.
And I had to give a talk about the apartheid system.
What year was that?
That would be 66 or 67. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
Right. So I had a little bit of background. I knew what it was all about. And the city had passed an ordinance that they would not do business with any companies that did business in South Africa. And this required a lot of affidavits to be filed by anybody that wanted to do business with the city. And the bureaucrats had prepared a 7-page affidavit for these guys to fill out, and they were having a little problems. Zevier Oskowski was the chairman of the committee, and Councilman Ridley Thomas was also on the committee, and they weren't happy with the way it was going with the purchasing guys doing this, and they asked the CAO to do it. And it ultimately ended up on my desk. And, you know, I said, the first thing I said, 7 pages is not going to cut it. Mm-hmm. So I trimmed and made it more. Basically, I came up with a 1-page affidavit that they would have to sign. And everybody signed off on it.
Which was basically stating what the city's policy was in dealing with.
You have to. This is the policy.
Apartheid.
You hereby certify that you are not doing business. None of your subsidiaries are doing business in South Africa, and it defines what doing business, the whole legal deal. So they would have to sign that, I guess under penalty of perjury, and file it. And then there was a big, you know, a lot of review and filing, and there were other cities that were involved. Oakland was involved. I think there was a city in Minnesota. There were some other people that were keeping track of this. So I had a sort of people I could bounce things off of if something looked weird. And, you know, there were a few companies that got caught, you know. So whether it did any good or not, I don't know. I think it must have. Eventually, Nelson Mandela came to City Hall. I got to shake his hand. That was kind of cool.
Wow.
And it was a huge day when they basically won.
Yeah, you can't say that the L.A. boycott solved the problem itself, but it certainly combined with other cities.
Did not hurt.
And when combined with other cities and states and other governments, obviously put pressure on the apartheid regime.
Yes.
Good for you. Anything else that you did while you were working for the city that stands out?
Well, I volunteered with a sports league in Watts that was created by Councilwoman Joan Milky Flores from the Harbor District at the time.
The name.
And I went to a meeting where they were talking about it, and her deputy pointed to me and said, you're going to be in charge of this. So for 5 or 6 years, I was the commissioner of the league. And basically what the idea was to provide inner-city kids the type of a program that you would get, like in the Palisades, with active parent involvement, where, you know, just because of the way things were, there weren't that many active parents. And so we were the parents, and we had the housing authority and the police department and recreation and parks directors from the various rec centers that were in the area. And everybody got together, and we would meet, and we would decide. We'd have a soccer league, baseball league. We'd have trips. And, when preparing for this, one of the things I just wanted to talk about, a trip that we took. We took a busload, a big bus, to Santa Barbara to see a soccer game in their former football stadium. And so I went on the bus, and there was a young man, probably 9 years old. And I said, I'll sit next to you. He said, okay, I said, let's sit on this side of the bus. We'll be able to see the ocean, see the beach. He said, oh, yeah. So he was next to the window. So we went up to, Santa Barbara, walked around the campus at UC Santa Barbara, saw the match, fed the kids, came back, sitting on the correct side of the bus, and we got all done. And I asked the kid, what was your favorite part of the day? He said, seeing the beach. He had never seen the ocean. And I thought, oh. You take a lot of things for granted, and
especially where we live.
Yes, of course, and so there's a different world out there that you have to be aware of. And if you can do something to help out, step up.
When we had our program, our Young Angels program in Watts, it was always amazing to me how the kids in the Palisades team had not been to Watts, and the kids on the Watts team had not been to the Palisades, and neither set of parents was particularly inclined to visit either way.
Yeah.
So it's amazing in LA how far 20 minutes can get you.
Right. I mean, they're right there. I mean, it's right. There's a county park and a city park right close together in Watts. They've got the fire station and the city hall, and of course the iconic white Watts Towers. You can't miss them.
We had a program at the 109th Street Rec Center, which was just a great, safe block and a really beautiful facility that had virtually no programming, very little programming,
yeah.
and you know, a pool and a baseball diamond, right. and basketball courts and not much going on.
I worked at that pool as a lifeguard.
It's a great place. We brought in a dance program.
I assume you, in your younger years?
Yes, and nothing against any water provider, what we may know of, but at the time, the water came from a private company, and they said that when they filled the pool, it was crystal clear. And you know that normally when you fill a pool, it's sort of greenish, and you think right. that's the water you're drinking.
Those were the days.
Yeah, that was then.
So you spent 35 years working for the city and then decided time to go?
No, my wife decided it was time to go. She said, you've had enough.
And you've been married forever and a day, right?
Yes.
Okay.
A long time.
So 35 years, and then did you know what you were going to do? Because as I said at the outset, of all the people I know, and I'm one who's thinking about retirement in the future, you are the ultimate role model about how to handle retirement, at least from an outsider's point of view, about things you've gotten involved with, the good work you've done, the community activities. And did you know before what you were going to do, or did you just say, I'm retiring and now I'll figure it out?
Well, I knew we were going to do some traveling, which we had took some wonderful trips. And I knew for sure that I would continue being active in the American Youth Soccer Organization, which I'd been active in, you know, since the 70s.
I've seen you in your soccer shorts.
Ah, uh-oh.
Yeah, we won't put that on the website. Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
So, and then I had the community group, the Santa Monica Canyon Civic Association, and then one day I was reading the paper and they said, well, the community council needs an alternate for Area 7, I think it was called. I'm looking, I said, oh, I'm in Area 7. I said, I'm looking for something to do. But
Now, were you already retired at this point, or were you doing it
No,
in
I was
advance?
Retired. I was
okay.
retired. The other thing, well, let me talk about that, then I'll back up. I filled out an application, and they said, "Okay, you're now a alternate." And I said, "Okay." So I said, "I'm going to go to a few meetings and see what this is all about as an alternate." Alternates, you know, they can talk, but they can't vote. And the gentleman, Mr. Ernie Meadows, had a time by which he would leave. So sometimes he would leave before the end of the meeting, and then suddenly I could vote if there was any vote to be had. And so that got me involved, and a few months later they asked me to be the chair. That was kind of a rapid rise. But there was something else that I wanted to talk about. Now I've
Well, we'll
lost
get
my train of thought.
Maybe we'll go on and we'll come back. So you were just now talking about the Santa Monica Canyon Civic Association, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's okay. One of the oldest community organizations in the state from the 40s.
And I read that you moved into Santa Monica Canyon in 1972?
Yes.
I don't want to ask you what you paid for your house back then. It would make
it was
sick.
Five figures.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah.
And at the time, we were going,
Yeah, yeah.
But it worked out.
Yeah, I'll say.
Quite well.
Still living in the same house?
Yes, and, you
no
know.
No mortgage.
We did some interesting things. The previous house, we lived in the Hollywood Hills, and my grandfather, my mother's father, was a real estate broker. Back in the day when you became a real estate broker by sticking a sign in the ground. And now you have to, you know, get a college degree and take tests and all this stuff. and he would bid on tax auctions, and he bought a small lot in the Hollywood Hills, and basically I inherited it, and we built a house on it, and with an architect from Pacific Palisades by the name of Ted Crane, who was really terrific, and excuse me, we did not hire a general contractor, which was kind of scary, but Ted advised us, and we, you know, took the bids and had various trades come through one after another. You know, watched carefully. My wife was there almost every day, so we got a. It was a kind of a really cool house. We had a two-story living room with all glass looking over the San Fernando Valley. And we were right in the shadow, literally in the shadow of Rudy Valley's house. So when the winter came, we had zero sun. That was sort of a downer. And my wife would look out the kitchen every day, and she would see the smog coming up from the San Fernando Valley. Because you could see it. If you're down in it, you don't see it.
Back then it was bad.
Yeah, this is in the early 60s, you know. And she was complaining, you know. And one day we said, okay, we're going to move. And it was a very hard decision. When you build a house, you know, it's very personal. So we spent 1 year driving through, talking to brokers, basically driving from Santa Monica Canyon up through the Palisades, looking. And we found a vacant lot. I can't even remember, you know, exactly what street it was on, but it was in the area sort of near Via de la Paz, but sort of east of there. It was a corner lot with an alley. I said, this is really cool. You know, we could, you know, put the garage in the alley and blah, blah, blah. So we tracked the guy down, wrote him a letter, and said, we would like to buy your lot. And then we kept looking, and we got a list of houses from one of the brokers that, you know, it's weekly listing, what do they call it? And the brokers sort of snarkily said, well, where's my list? Said, okay, you know, we'll return it. So we went back on a Saturday, drove down, put the were closed, stuck it under the door, gave her multiple listing list back, and turned around, and there was a Santa Monica Evening Outlook newspaper.
I remember it.
Yes, I remember them. And I said, oh, what the heck, while we're here... So we pulled out the newspaper and went through, and we saw a listing, Santa Monica Canyon, house, double cul-de-sac, open house on Sunday. This is Saturday, okay? So I said, I think I know where the double cul-de-sac is. So we drove around. We found it. We went in there. The lady was very nice. She said, we're not having the open house till tomorrow. So long story short, we were in escrow on Tuesday. So we're very happy with obviously where we are. They said, you know, we tried to figure out how to remodel, how to put in a second floor, and we couldn't figure it out. So we bought the house. We hired Carl Day, who's the architect in the canyon, and he figured it out. And we added a second story. And from the two things happened from the what we learned from watching our previous house built from scratch, and that there were certain things that we could probably do, and I did all the electrical. I didn't do the panel, but I did everything after the panel. You can, as an owner, you can do that if you, I guess, you pass a test or whatever. And so, you know, we put in three-way light switches and one four-way switch. That had the kids had to pull wire cable. They weren't too happy doing that, but they did. we did shingles, which I and a kid from UCLA that I hired did them all. We put in wooden roofs, ceilings, I mean, and I put all those boards in. Sometimes I'd come home from work, and I remember one night I came home and put up one board. This is not all the way across. This is just one board. Mm-hmm. There was a knot where you had the nail. It was a big challenge. You know, had to drill it and got it in. I said, that's it. I'm done for today. So what came out of all that is that Diane, my wife, was so hands-on that she said, you know, I bet I could teach a class for people that want to know, should we remodel? And if we remodel, should we, you know, try to do it ourselves? Should we hire a contractor or a general contractor, or what should we do? And so she put together a lesson plan and went to UCLA Extension, and she became a instructor at UCLA Extension for several years. She became a senior instructor, I guess, and taught this class. We even taught the class one time up in at Cal Berkeley, at the extension up there. And it was, very terrific class, met a lot of nice people, and it was, you know, making use of your experience and sharing it with other people.
So what was it like living in the Palisades back starting in 72? I know you were in Santa Monica Canyon, but obviously close to the Palisades.
Yeah.
Are there any things that you can look back on and say, well, this was really unique or this was special about the Palisades back then?
Well, you know, in our particular little neighborhood, somebody had these pennants in their garage that they would drag out on the 4th of July and then run them from tree to tree to tree. And they had this, which they don't have the pennants anymore, but they still have an amazing little 4th of July thing in our canyon. They have kids races, they have a parade, they have a softball game, they have barbecue. Particularly when you are sort of close to the beach, you don't really want to go anywhere on 4th of July. And so that was what they did. And my talent was putting up the pennants.
Among other skills. And with that, let's take a brief break for a word from our sponsors.
I just want to say congratulations to Denise from Boca on the marriage of her stepdaughter and tell her that all the ladies in the Palisades want her to get her butt back from Montana, Av, and remember us in the Palisades. We want you back. We want your clothes back. And to Vivian of Vivian's Boutique on Via, thank you for helping me look like a human most days. That's all for now.
Okay. So back with George Wolfberg. For the last segment, George, I would like to focus on your retirement, which has been hardly retirement. It's not like you've been sitting around, but I want to talk about some of the things that you've done in retirement. And for myself and others, I think you serve as a model of how to make retirement productive and worthwhile.
Okay, well, like I said, we wanted to take trips. The very first day of retirement, we jumped in the car or the van, I can't remember which, and we drove on highway, Interstate 20, I think it is, where it says there's 3,422 miles to somewhere in Carolinas. And we brought camping stuff with us, so if there was an appropriate place, we would camp. Otherwise, we would stay in hotels or motels, and went across the country. Saw, you know, it was a great trip to see lots of the country. Found out it takes a long time to drive through Tennessee because it's the long way. that was a wonderful experience. And we took a couple of cruises. I would recommend both of them. Probably you may have taken them already. One was through the Panama Canal. That is really awesome just to see something they built in, what, 1914 or whatever, to see how it works. And it's one of the, you know, like it's seven wonders of the world in a way. And also we took a cruise to Alaska, and the inland cruise, I think the inland waterway, what do they call it? So we went to places where you could not go.
Inside Passage.
Yeah, we went to saw places where, you know, you just couldn't go if you weren't on the ship. And so that was really cool.
So let's give me just a quick list of some of the organizations you've been involved with since you retired.
Well, it's, you know, the Santa Monica Canyon Civic Association, the Community Council, AYSO. That's probably most of it, although I did spend some time. I was appointed to the County Bicycle Advisory Committee and worked on a plan with the county.
You were also involved in the No Oil campaign, weren't you?
Yes, that was kind of tough because the city administrative officer, one of their top guys, was the city petroleum administrator. So I had to walk a fine line. I didn't, you know, was not a public person. I just helped in the background. I was assistant treasurer. And the treasurer was a great guy. He timed his vacations for the week after an appeal went out. So I would get, you know, just a bushel of envelopes. I remember the $200 checks from Walter Matthau would come regularly, which is a nice contribution for back then.
For those listeners that don't know, what was it, about 30 years ago, 20 years ago? I'm not sure. There was a campaign, Occidental Petroleum wanted to drill just off the Palisades, and there was a grassroots campaign of many Palisadians to stop it.
Right. Well, we one of the classes I took at USC was an environmental class, and Shirley Solomon, who was the, you know, one of the founders of No Oil, came and spoke, and I don't even know if it was, I think it was even before we had moved to the Palisades, and I was just so taken by their, you know, and I've gone to the beach all my life. I used to surf a lot, and so knowing the, you know, they had that blowout in Santa Barbara, knowing all these bad things that could happen, I thought, well, definitely this is a lady who knows what she's doing, somebody I want to support. So I started going to their meetings before we even moved, and then, as I say, became assistant treasurer for a while, and you know, helped them behind the scenes.
And I remember there was an election that was put on the ballot.
Yes.
And the way the two positions were written, it was as if you wanted one thing to happen, and I don't remember the details, you should vote for the one that looks like it's not going to happen, because the wording was all switched around so that the Occidental proposal made it look like they were stopping oil drilling when in fact it was giving them a green light.
Imagine that politicians would do that.
Yeah, yeah. Especially when hundreds of millions of dollars are involved.
Right. Well, they had actually drilled a test well in the canyon.
Right.
And the Civic Association was very alarmed about this and was an early opponent.
So focusing just on the Santa Monica Canyon Civic Association, what issues, if any, stand out in your mind that you're proud of, that you worked on during the time you've been involved with them?
I'm not sure where to start. One of the biggest issues they had was there was a plan by the city of Santa Monica to build a causeway from the base of the McClure Tunnel to I'm not sure where, which would have left a like some fetid water in between the causeway and the beach. So it would have destroyed the beach. There would have been no more waves. It would have been just horrible. That was one of the big fights that the Civic Association got involved in. And, of course, there was the Santa Monica, or the, excuse me, the California Incline. I attend a group that's called the Pacific Coast Highway Task Force, PCH Task Force, that was put together by Sheila Kuehl when she was in the Assembly, I believe. And so it carried with her through all her terms, and then she went on to retire from the Assembly, from state government. And the task force continues, and basically it has all the people who do anything that has anything to do with the Coast Highway, trying to make the highway safer, trying to make it safer for bike riders like you, Steve, and this... one of the meetings, the guy, Jim Krager, I remember, he's leaving. It's his last meeting. He says, "By the way, we're going to rebuild the California Incline." I thought, "Uh-oh, nothing good is going to happen to that if you live in Santa Monica Canyon, because all the traffic is going to get routed through the canyon. That's because naturally people are going to go." And this is before people had all the apps and everything that give them shortcuts and take. So eventually we embarked upon years, and not just me, but many, many people in the canyon and in others, dealing with the city of Santa Monica. We would invite them to come to our annual meeting to make presentations. And they would go to the city council in Santa Monica and say, "Well, we presented to the Santa Monica Canyon Civic," you know. So pretty soon we were sort of locked in a death grip, where if we called, they had to answer. And so we worked with them and got information. It turned out not as bad as it could have been, in large part because of a lot of input from local people. You mentioned Norman Culla earlier, I think, and he was one of the leaders that helped deal with the city of Santa Monica to get agreements. They agreed to provide traffic officers to avoid terrible gridlock around the elementary school. They did a few things to make things a little easier. They put in a lot of signs to try to direct people away from the canyon, which I think were ignored, but it was a good try.
I remember when I was on the council, there were issues of retrofitting the California Incline. There was also that lengthy process where they were redoing the drainage, the sewers.
The sewer, yeah. And that the interceptor sewer, yeah.
That was a nightmare. It disrupted traffic on PCH for a few years. And one thing that stands out in my mind is people saying, "George, what's going to happen with that?" And you say, "Well, I've spoken to somebody in Santa Monica. I've spoken to somebody with the Department of Transportation." And it always seemed like you were the guy that kind of knew who to talk to, not necessarily to solve the problem, but to make it better, taking a bad situation and making it a little bit better.
Right. I think just knowing the people and knowing that you're not hysterical and that you have some logic behind your requests and you know, in good measure, that they would... They listened to you, and we got changes made. Another change I'd like to talk about: there's a pocket when you go down the highway to go up the incline. There's that left turn pocket, and I used to jog along the cliff there, and I'd look down and I'd see cars lined up in this pocket, and the pocket was obviously not big enough, and then the cars would block the next lane of the highway. Terrible for commuting traffic.
So the number one lane was always jammed because people were waiting to turn left.
So we went and talked to the engineers in Santa Monica, and having Caltrans do it was probably not going to happen very quickly, but the Santa Monica got the approval from Caltrans, and Santa Monica went and paid for getting this left turn pocket extent doubled in size. They had to block off left turns into one of their own large parking lots to do this. But they saw the sense in that, and they were terrific about doing that, and they did it very quickly. And it's been very helpful to facilitate the flow of traffic on the Coast Highway. So I was really proud of getting that done.
Yeah, and like I said, you're somebody that I think of as the fixer, the guy that knows who to talk to, can get things done because you're calm, you're relaxed, and you're reasonable. And rather than screaming and yelling and having a fit, people will listen. And you have, for various periods of time, have made life a lot easier for those of us who live in the Palisades.
My mother always said you get more flies with honey. Exactly.
And four hands are better than two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another area we wanted to talk about is the L.A. City Charter, which you worked on after you retired. Please tell us.
Right. Well, I mentioned that, we retired, we took these trips, and I got a call one day that they were going to have a city charter review commission, and that they were building staff, and they wanted me to come aboard. I had worked on the city charter, several proposals to amend the city charter, so I was familiar with it, and all those proposals went down in flames. But this was, they were pretty serious. In fact, they were so serious that they had two charter commissions, an elected one run by Erwin Chemerinsky, who's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And he really, it took him a couple weeks, but pretty soon he was running the show quite a bit. And we had George Kiefer, who was on the appointed commission. It was very intense because it's a commission, there's the Brown Act, you're meeting every other Wednesday, and I think it was Wednesday, and it was like teaching a graduate seminar course that had never been taught before. We had to do research.
Were you trying to accomplish? What was the
We're trying to bring all the commissioners up to speed on the options and what's going on here, what's going on there, what does this mean, what what could you do, and just go through, like, we spent a whole meeting on the city attorney, for example. We had, Ira Reiner and other people came and talked about what the city attorney does. Should the city attorney be separated into a prosecutor and an advisor? So it was a very, complex but very interesting, and obviously, the attorneys were very motivated to give their input. So we would prepare this material for the commission, and it had to be mailed out by Friday because there's a Wednesday meeting coming up. I think they actually met every week. And if you couldn't get it out by Friday, you had to go drive it down to the airport to get it out 72 hours before the meeting. And so they split the staff in half. One staff would be working on the next meeting, another staff group would be working on the meeting after that. So it went on and on and on. I went through all the various issues. Some of the things that, one of the things I'm really proud of is the neighborhood councils came out of that. And the Palisades was a model, in effect, for neighborhood council system. And in addition, the planning department was a commission was devolved because the city is so big, so diverse, you can have something happening in San Pedro or in Canoga Park, and maybe none of the commissioners knew anything about that area. So you get the commissioners who are from the area. We have a West LA Area Planning Commission. They live in the area. They drive by these sites. They're familiar with the locations that are under. They can go out and see the stuff, so they know the area, and they are closer to the decision that has to be made, and sort of not remote like the Central City Planning Commission. And I think this has been pretty darn successful.
So, George, I have nothing else to ask. Brooke, is there anything you wanted to?
Just thank you for everything you've done to make the town a prettier, better, nicer place.
And as everybody says, and it's true, George is one of the nicest guys around, and has been just a model of how to make things better in the Palisades. And on behalf of everybody, we thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Our pleasure. Nice talking to you.